and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. It's Monday, it's the 5th of November. It's fireworks night, actually. Fantastic. And we have a great show ahead of you this morning. And we have a special guest interview on the show this morning. We have Dave Mayhew from Target First Aid. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Good morning, Neil. Very well, thank you.
Fantastic. It's great to have you on the show this morning.
Thanks for inviting us on.
And we're going to find out more about what Dave does a bit later on in the show in about 20 minutes or so. We're also going to be talking about the contents of your protein bar. So if you're a little bit unsure about what's in your protein bar, your so-called healthy bar, then we're going to go through some ingredients that you might want to look at the next time you pick one up. And you may want to think twice. We're also going to continue the subject of women's health. A couple of weeks ago, we discussed some foods that were good for women's health. And we're going to continue that theme a bit later on in the show as well. If you'd like to tweet me, the show's Twitter feed is at Health Radio Show. And if you can follow the Twitter feed, you'll be given lots of updates as we go through the week. And also the show's Facebook page is The Health Matters Radio Show. And again, if you can like that, then obviously you'll get regular updates. You can listen again to this show and previous shows on the media page of my website and also on the iTunes podcast. And if you'd like to contact me individually and privately, then you can do so through my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. So before we kick off, a quick disclaimer. The purpose of the Health Matters Radio Show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters covered. It's to help you educate, so help to educate and inform you in ways that you can improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice, and the content in the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 first or speaking with your local pharmacist. All content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research on the topics that we discuss. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience, and often my opinion, and I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the show. So, protein bars. Most people, if you talk to them about protein bars, they will say that they are the healthy option compared to, say, a bar of chocolate. And yes, there is some truth in that. They are higher in protein than many other snack bars. However, not all protein bars are built equal, and there's some out there that have ingredients that, in my opinion, are quite questionable. So we're going to go through some ingredients that the next time you pick up your protein bar, you might want to have a look through the list and see if some of the ingredients I'm going to mention are on the ingredients list, because do you know what? Some of these ingredients are not particularly good for you, even though the said protein bar might be marketed as being a healthy snack. So why are protein bars so good? Obviously, the big benefit of a protein bar is they have a lot of protein compared to other snack bars of a similar size and calorific value. Then obviously they are higher in protein than other snacks. They also have carbohydrates, they have fat and fibre, and all these work together to provide your body with the fuel it needs, particularly if you're going to be exercising. But as I mentioned, not all protein bars are the same. Some of the cons, well, some of them are very high in sugar. Some of them have got as much sugar as said chocolate bars. Some of them have as much as 30 grams of sugar, which is ridiculous. Also, some have partially hydrogenated fats in them, so trans fats, which are unhealthy for you. Some have high fructose corn syrup. Some have colouring. Some have artificial sugars and sweeteners. Some have sugar alcohols, and lots of them have additives. We're going to go through some of the common ones, and please do, the next time you pick up your protein bar, do have a look through the ingredients, because some of these things are really not good for you. So let's start with the main ingredient, which is protein. Lots of them have soy protein in them, and actually good quality non-genetically modified soy protein is not necessarily bad for the body. Okay, in high doses, I'd argue that it's not so healthy, But as an odd snack bar, as an odd protein bar here and there, this it's not particularly bad. However, lots of protein bars use a substance called soy protein isolate. Now, soy protein isolate is junk protein, in my opinion. So what they do is they isolate the soy protein, and it really is the bargain basement side of soy protein. So they isolate the soy protein, and that can leave behind traces of neurotoxins, and these include hexane and aluminium. And also they can also include that they can also start up digestive issues by blocking inhibitors, or so they have higher concentrations of trypsin inhibitors, which block the digestion of plant protein. So soy protein isolate isn't particularly good for the body. As I say, it's kind of the junk end of the soy protein market. And the big concern is, and this is a takeaway for any product that you eat that has soy protein in it, unless it says GMO free on the packaging, it probably is genetically modified. And it's estimated that around 95% of the world's soy is genetically modified. And companies that use non-GMO soy will generally see it as a good selling point, and it will be blazoned across the labels of that particular food. So look out for soy protein isolate. It's not particularly good for you, and when it comes to soy generally, just make sure that the soy protein that you're eating is not genetically modified. Inulin is a type of fiber which is put in a lot of protein bars, and this soluble fiber is found in things like asparagus, onions, artichokes, and it also works as a prebiotic, so it helps feed the friendly bacteria in your gut. However, the inulin that's found in a lot of energy bars and protein bars comes from chicory root. So again, it's the cheaper end of the fiber market. And actually, when chicory root inulin is consumed in large amounts, it can actually cause digestive distress. And it can give you an upset stomach. It can give you diarrhea, gas, bloating, constipation. So again, watch out for that. High fructose corn syrup. Now, I've covered high fructose corn syrup on previous shows. And this is a type of sugar where they take corn syrup and they add enzymes to it to switch the balance of glucose to fructose to be more fructose than glucose. So it's a chemically made sweetener, and it's a sweetener that has actually been linked to weight gain. It's been linked to abdominal fat increase. It's also been linked to insulin resistance as well. So there's a link between high fructose corn syrup and type 2 diabetes. But the thing is that because this is a cheap form of sweetener, you need to be careful, because this can cause things like liver damage, because the fructose in it in high doses can cause liver damage. And if the company is using high fructose corn syrup in its ingredients, it probably doesn't care too much about high quality ingredients. Again, it's a bit like the soy protein isolate. It's a bit like the inulin that comes from chicory. These are cheap ingredients. They're not particularly healthy for you. They're not good for your body. So if you look on your label and it says high fructose corn syrup, not just on your protein bar, but anything that you eat, even tomato ketchup has high fructose corn syrup added to it. Trust me, high fructose corn syrup is not a healthy sweetener. So try and avoid it at all costs. So agave syrup is another one. Lots of protein bars have agave. People think, oh, it's agave, it's natural, it comes from a plant. Actually, in its processed form, it's really not natural. And it is actually one of the most refined sugars out there. And it has more fructose in it than high fructose corn syrup, which is actually saying something. And again, as I've just mentioned, high fructose corn syrup is linked to things like obesity, diabetes, and fatty liver disease. And the thing with agave syrup is it can turn off leptin. And leptin is a hormone that controls hunger and those feelings that we get of being full up. So if you look through your ingredients list and you see agave syrup, you might want to think twice. Soy lecithin. Now, soy lecithin is a food additive from soy protein, and it's used to stick things together in processed foods. And as we've mentioned, soy is one of several foods that tends to be highly processed, and it tends to be genetically modified. So again, if you see soy lecithin on, that's L-E-C-I-T-H-I-N. If you see soy lecithin on the ingredients list and it doesn't say non-GMO, then you might want to think twice about it. Sucralose, I covered sucralose a few weeks ago when I was talking about sweetness. So sucralose is chlorinated sugar, which on its own isn't particularly healthy, but it is super, super sweet and it's very, very cheap. And one of the things about sucralose is it can disrupt the body's blood sugar management, which can cause spikes in insulin levels, even though there's no actual sugar as such in it. And that can lead to you having these carb cravings and actually feeling more hungry before after you've eaten it than before you've eaten it. And as I've covered before in previous shows, these sweeteners are linked to things like heart disease and diabetes. Palm kernel oil. Now, palm oil sounds tropical, doesn't it? It sounds like a desert island. It sounds natural, but actually fractionated palm oil is palm oil that's undergone a process to separate the liquid from the solid part of the oil. And what you end up with is a more shelf stable, less melting fat, which is great for things like the chocolate coating on bars and processed snacks, but it contains high levels of saturated fat. And actually, fractionated palm oil has more saturated fat in it than butter, so it's not necessarily particularly healthy. And again, like soy lecithin, it's actually used to bind ingredients together. But it's also very sweet, it's full of saturated fat, and not particularly healthy for you. And if you're looking at the environmental side, the process of extracting palm oil is linked to deforestation and also the destruction of animal habitats. And the last one, sugar alcohols. So sugar alcohols don't need to necessarily be mentioned as a carbohydrate on the ingredients label, but these sharp as things like mannitol, sorbitol, xylitol, lactitol, isomalt, maltitol, and hydrogenated starch, hydrogisates, HSHs. Now, these don't contain the amount of sugars the amount of calories that sugar contains, but they're very cheap forms of sweeteners. And sugar alcohols can be very hard to digest, and they can cause things like gas and bloating and diarrhea. So very quickly, what do you need to do when you're looking at your protein bar? You need to check the ingredients list. Don't rely on food labels, just on the front of the packaging, so the traffic light system. Actually read the ingredients. Know what you're eating. Look at the primary source of protein. If it's soy protein isolate, then it's not particularly good for you. If it's soy protein, then make sure it's non-genetically modified. Look for protein bars that have got at least 10 grams of protein in them. If you're going to use protein bars as part of your exercise routine, then going for ones that are moderately high in carbohydrates is not a bad thing. So, you know, if it's nut-based, but if it's predominantly sugar, then that I'd argue that isn't particularly healthy. So, again, look at the food label, read the ingredients. Try and get a bar with no more than 10 to 15 grams of fat, and make sure that those fats are from unsaturated sources. And when it comes to sugar, go for bars that have the lowest sugar number that you can find. Not necessarily carbohydrates, but sugar. If you've got a bar that's got 36 grams of carbohydrates and 30 grams of sugar, you know it's pretty much all sugar and probably the same as a typical chocolate bar. So carbohydrates aren't bad, but the sugar is. And most people eat protein bars to improve their diet and not to add more sugar to it. But many people are adding sugar to their diet through their protein bars because they're not reading the food labels. Look for protein bars that have got a good source of fiber in them. So you're going some way to your 30 grams, your goal of 30 grams of fiber per day. And be careful of these sugar alcohols because they don't need to be listed as carbohydrates. So you could be actually consuming more carbs than you think. So again, sugar alcohols, you need to be careful of those. Xylitol, maltitol, those things I've already mentioned, you need to be careful of sugar alcohols. The big takeaway is read your food labels. Read your food labels when it comes to your protein bars and read your food labels generally speaking. So after the break, we're going to go on to our guest interview. But before then, we have a classic from Thin Lizzy and it's Whiskey in the Jar. Thank you.
you swore that you loved me. Never would you leave me. But the devil take that woman, for you know she treat me easy. Push your ring, dumma do dumma da. Wait for my daddy, oh. Wait for my daddy, oh. There's whiskey in the jar.
Thin Lizzy and Whiskey in a Jar. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show. It's Monday, the 5th of November, 2018. And we're going to go on in a moment to our guest interview with Dave Mayhew from Target First Aid. But before we do that, a quick reminder of the show's Twitter feed. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, the handle is at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, if you search the Health Matters Radio Show, you can follow the show page. And again, you can listen to this show and previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, or on iTunes. If you search the Health Matters Radio Show, you can find the show's podcast. Okay, so on to our guest interview. Today we have Dave Mayhew from Target First Aid. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Neil.
And how are you doing this morning?
I'm very well, thank you.
Brilliant. And we're going to find out more about what Dave does, how he got into doing what he's doing, and how he might be able to help you. And actually, I met Dave a few months ago now, and I was fascinated by what he does, because I don't often come across people that actually are first aid trainers but have a background that's kind of led up to them becoming a first aid trainer. As I've mentioned before, lots of my guests come on my show and their background has led them into doing what they do now. And I think that makes someone very genuine. When they've had a battle to fight or they've got experience that's taken them into whatever they're doing at the moment, I think it gives them that extra credibility. So we're going to go on and find out more about what Dave does. So Dave, let's start with the background. What is your background? What's your experience? Where have you come from? And how did you get into doing what you're doing at the moment?
Okay, I was born, grew up in Gravesend, moved around the Medway towns and Maidstone. But growing up in my early years, I always wanted to be a firefighter.
Okay.
It's all I wanted to be. Several members of the family were firefighters. I was fortunate enough to get in the fire brigade, and after 30 years in the Kent Fire and Rescue Service, I retired last year. Alongside being a firefighter, an operational firefighter, I've been teaching first aid for about 20 years now. I signed up with several different training providers, delivering first aid to any type of business, schools, and I found that I actually enjoyed meeting people and I love teaching them life-saving skills.
So how did it go down with those businesses? Because we mentioned before before the show started that in the UK we are so behind the times when it comes to things like first aid training, and there are other companies, particularly in Europe, where I'm sure you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's almost obligatory, isn't it? In some cases, you have to have be first aid trained. I seem to recall having that conversation.
Yeah, certainly in France, I know to get a driving license, you have to have a first aid qualification.
Oh, really?
So that means that most adults certainly everybody that drives has got a first aid qualification. Unfortunately, we're so far behind in this country. I've got a friend who sells defibrillators after an experience where he saved somebody's life using a defibrillator.
Mm-hmm.
So he went on a personal crusade to try and sell defibrillators. He did the investigations. He went across Europe. And for example, you know, these are rough figures that he's given me. If you have a cardiac arrest in this country, the figures that we're getting at the moment, about approximately 6% people survive.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go to Vienna, you've got a 60% chance of survival. And children are taught first aid in schools. They have to do it every year. They're taught to use defibrillators. So we're a long, long way behind in this country.
So it's even part of the curriculum?
Yes. In certain parts of Europe, it's part of the curriculum. I know there's people out there asking for that to become part of the curriculum in this country, and we support that fully. All children should be taught first aid.
And it's one of those skills that I've said to people, it's better to have it and not need it.
Absolutely.
Than need it and not have it. And I have, actually, you mentioned about Europe. I have noticed when I've been on holiday in Italy and Spain and Portugal, there's lots of defib machines outside churches and town halls and chemists. Don't seem to see them so much in this country, although I think they're becoming more popular. But the thing is if you don't know how to use it, it may as well not be there.
Absolutely. Thank goodness the people are waking up now, and we're so far behind America. They've been using defibs for years. But now my wife will tell you how boring I am. I go around to various village halls and say, oh, they've got a defibrillator, or there's a defibrillator in the phone box. Yeah, it's great fun to go out for a day with me.
Mr. Defibrillator.
Yeah.
So tell me about Target First Aid. So we're going to fast forward now to 2014. Give me an idea of how Target First Aid came into being.
Well, for several years, back in 1999, I started teaching first aid. And over the years, you know, little seeds of doubt were creeping into my mind. One of the things that really created Target on the road to becoming the company, I was doing a first aid course in a school. I've been doing that school first aid training since 2006. And what happened was, because we got on very, very well, they showed me how much they were being charged for me to actually deliver the training.
Okay.
I knew how much I was getting paid, and it was almost obscene in my mind, because the training provider was basically getting three times more than the instructor. In 2014, for 2014, a friend of mine said, why don't you set up, go out on your own and start your own company? So we got a few like-minded instructors together.
Mm-hmm.
We discussed the options, and we decided to set up Target First Aid. What people have to understand is Target First Aid isn't like a normal first aid training provider, whereas we are more of a cooperative. We all work alongside each other. We help each other out. By doing that, we can give a better quality training
mm-hmm.
at a better price.
So do you tend to find that with some first aid training companies, everyone that trains has the same skill set? And what I mean by that is, obviously, I've been on a recent training course with you, and it was fantastic, by the way.
Thank you.
But with you and your co-trainer, you have commonalities in your skill sets, but you have different skill sets as well. Obviously, his background was different to yours, and you each bring something different to the party.
Yes, we do, but there is a basic... we've all worked in the emergency services,
mm-hmm.
so we've all got the practical skills, and we've actually used the first aid. Lots of training providers out there, their instructors learned it all from books.
And it's all theory.
It's all theory. Mm. And we realise that sometimes you've got to be adaptable and you deal with what you're faced with. Being part of the emergency services, you develop these skills. So it's important to us that all of the instructors that work alongside us at Target First Aid are emergency service personnel or retired.
Because they've had that experience.
Absolutely. And they've also developed the communication skills that are so important. We know how to talk to people. We know how to get the message across, which is very important.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. So in what ways does your training courses help people? Obviously, you know, we are talking about first aid. We're talking about CPR, how to use a defibrillator. But generally speaking, how does first aid training, how can it help an individual?
Right, obviously, you've already touched on it. We teach the basic life-saving skills. We like to give people confidence to respond. When I've met people, I've met hundreds of people over the years, and you find that some people have been put off helping in an emergency situation because they're worried about getting it wrong. They're worried about getting sued. If you come onto one of our courses, we keep things very, very simple.
Mm.
And what we like to do is give people the confidence to help. We also, in other ways we can help with teaching people in the classic sense of the word by giving first aid. But what we also have got on our website, we've got a first aid requirements calculator. Now, lots of businesses out there have no idea what type of first aid provision they need in the workplace,
mm.
what type of first aiders, how many. We've got a free-to-use tool on our website, and what that does, you put in a few details. Doesn't cost you anything apart from 5 minutes of your time, and that will give you back the recommendations as to what sort of first aid provision you should have. It's free to use, and this is based on the Health and Safety Executive guidelines, nothing to do with Target First Aid or Dave Mayhew. So the advice you'll get in there, it is good advice. It's free to use, so we can help people in that way.
So is there a legal requirement to have a first aider in your workplace?
In most businesses, yes.
Okay.
Depending on the level of risk, you might some companies and some businesses are exempt. But
okay.
know, as a general rule, you should have some first provision in the workplace, first aid provision.
And actually, I mean, for the employers out there, I'm sure you've got a first aid kit somewhere lurking, you know, hidden away in a cupboard somewhere or around the back of the sink. But the big question is actually when push comes to shove, do you know how to use it? Does someone in your company know how to use it if there was an emergency? Or if one of your staff did, you know, collapse, have a heart attack, whatever it might be, have an accident, you know, have a wound of some sort. You know, it's no good having a first aid kit if you don't know what to do with it.
Absolutely.
And actually, you know, whilst we're talking about health in the workplace, this skill set transfers, of course, into our own personal lives. Because if you are out on the street or out with your family and something happened, for the most part, I'd say the majority of people wouldn't know what to do if someone collapsed in the street. You might be that one person that has been trained. Okay, trained for first aid in the workplace, but it's not just about first aid in the workplace. It's about being first aid trained at any time of day.
This is the message we're trying to get out there. Yes, people are almost press-ganged into attending a first aid course. They turn up because they have to be there. And we've had several experiences where, and I just one example here, we had a chap who was on the course the end of last year.
Mm.
And before I start the course, I always say, any questions before we start? And the common answer is, yes, what time do we finish? And, you know, if I was looking at me, I'd be thinking the same thing. But this chap, he actually he sent me a message following the course, the weekend following the course, and he'd saved his baby daughter's life, his six-month-old daughter's life. And he really realises the importance of first aid. Mm. Yes, if your business is going to pay for you to come on a first aid course, see it as a positive thing because you might need it in your home life as well, your personal life.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's interesting the point you made about people being worried about taking action for fear of getting it wrong or being sued.
Absolutely.
And they get scared in those situations. I mean, obviously you mentioned choking. I would guess choking is quite a common thing.
Choking, if I was to put down how many times people have said to me that choking is their main fear, you know, it's generally most courses, somebody says they're worried about choking. And one particular childminder, I mean, she was kind of in the wrong job, really, because she was terrified of looking after other people's children in case they choked.
Right.
Now, she attended one of her courses and I gave her the sort of techniques and kept it very, very simple. And she in fact sent me a message where she'd saved a young boy's life who had been choking. And so things like that, it's so important. Yeah, and people are worried about getting sued. This is a major thing. At our level of first aid, it's very unlikely to be sued because you're just there to assist. You're there to fill the gap before the emergency services or the specialists get
there. To stop the situation getting any worse.
Absolutely.
You're not there as a doctor. You're not expected to heal the person or cure the person. You're just there to stop the situation escalating.
Absolutely. You're not going to perform miracle surgery. You're just there to fill the gap.
And you've got lots of testimonials I noticed on your website, which is www.targetfirstaid.com. But you mentioned about a situation recently when you've got a message from a nanny.
Absolutely. It was only Friday. I mean, Monday today, Friday. I knew I was coming on the show. This nanny, she sent me pictures, which are quite graphic. She had a severe burn and she dealt with it in the way that she'd been taught. Hopefully she'll have no scarring and she's so grateful because before the course she wouldn't have known what to do. It was a severe burn. I had a teacher. I was doing a first aid course in school, and the teacher that had been on my courses for many years, and she saved a teenager's life that had overdosed on drugs by performing CPR. These skills that, you know, everybody should be taught in first aid.
So some of the skills that you're teaching people, aside from the very intangible skill of being confident, which comes from obviously through knowledge and education, but having the skills to execute first aid, it kind of is nothing without the confidence to do it, is it?
Absolutely. Our motto, Neil, is communicating clearly, developing the confidence to respond.
Yeah.
Now, we were both at a meeting last week, and one of the people on that meeting had been on one of my courses recently, and he's a runner. He was out running. He saw a big crowd of people around the lady on the floor, and in the past, he admitted to me he would have carried on running.
Yeah.
But he had the confidence to go and see if he could help. Yeah, that's priceless.
And having been on your course, it does give you a sense of responsibility as well, knowing that if someone has collapsed and there's a group of people around them, probably most of those people don't know what to do.
Yep, absolutely.
So you do have that sense of responsibility.
Yes.
So you train people in terms of how to use a defibrillator, CPR, recovery position, cuts, burns, scalds, those sorts of things?
Yeah, we can do a couple of hour course, just basic CPR, how to use a defibrillator.
Yeah.
We go to a three-day course where you learn everything, how to deal with diabetes, epilepsy, fractures, you name it, we cover it.
Okay, so you can fit a course to the needs of that particular business that organisation.
That is the strength of what we got. We're very flexible, very adaptable. If you need a two-hour course, fine. But we will tailor the course to the individual. So, for example, the course that we do for construction workers will be different to a course that we deliver to a nursery.
Yes.
And that's a skill set that we have. We can adapt to the people that are in front of us.
Brilliant. So what are your plans for 2019, taking us into next year?
Well, excuse me. It sounds very cheesy. We're a very, very small company that's saturated with first aid providers. If you own a business out there, then I'm sure you'll agree you get thousands of emails, people offering their services to you. Our plans for 2019 is to hit a larger market. We need to get the word out there. The services that we provide And that's our plans for 2019, really spreading the word.
Brilliant. So who's your ideal client? For people listening out there, who is your target audience?
Right. Anybody that needs or wants first aid, regardless of professional or personal reasons.
Okay.
We're trying to hit everybody. And it sounds cheesy again because we're just after everybody that needs first aid. We spoke about the survival rates abroad. Mm-hmm. We want to get the survival rates up in this country. So our ideal client would be anybody that needs first aid.
So it can be companies that need on-site training for their staff, and also you run one-off training sessions as well. People, individuals can come to you and spend a few hours being trained as well.
Yep, we have individual courses. We have open courses where individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where individuals from any walk of life can join us. And it can be for personal reasons or professional, or we can go into the bigger businesses. Sometimes you go into schools and we'll have four instructors working in the same at the same place at the same time.
Wow.
So whatever size, individual or big business, we can cater for you.
And as we've mentioned, obviously there are a lot of first aid training companies out there. Why should people look at Target First Aid rather than going to another provider?
Right. People should definitely come to us because we pride ourselves on our delivery. We deliver the training in an engaging manner. It's so important to us that people become or keep engaged throughout the course. They don't get bored. We don't want anybody saying that the course is boring and they switched off.
Mm-hmm.
We don't believe we can be beaten on the quality of our trainers. They're sort of cherry picked. We only have the best, and the people with communication skills, with the practical knowledge. We're also a training station for QualSafe Awards. Now, they are the biggest awarding body now in the UK in relation to regulated qualifications. So we are kept up to date with any changes in protocols or equipment, all the latest guidelines. We're up to date with all the protocols. And the reason they should come to us, we're unlikely to be beaten on price for mm-hmm. the top quality training instructors. We deliver a premium service at an affordable price. And the message we're trying to get out there, because some businesses have told us they haven't used us because they think we're too cheap. So they think the service isn't that good. This isn't the case.
I will second that. I think extremely good value for money.
Thank you.
Without a doubt. And having spent the day with you on one of your courses, I would highly recommend it. It's a skill that everyone should have. You're better to have it and not need it, and then need it and not have it. But the way you delivered it, as a personal testimonial, it was brilliant. I would highly recommend you.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
So if people want to get in contact with you, Dave, what are your contact details?
The best way to contact us is via email. And it's all words. There's no numbers. It's just very simple. targetfirstaid@gmail.com.
Okay.
Or you can get onto our website, www.targetfirstaid.com, and use our contact us page.
Yep.
Alternatively, we've got a Facebook page, Target First Aid. You could message us through Facebook. Or, going back to the good old days, we're always happy to take a phone call at Target First Aid on 01795 873 814.
Super. And I'll put those contact details on the show's Facebook page as well after the show. So people want to refer back to those numbers, obviously, and that contact information, you just need to go to the show's Facebook page.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you for coming on the show. It's been great to find out more about your background and obviously what you do and your plans for next year as well. And as I said, I've experienced Dave's services personally, and I highly recommend him. It's very, very good.
Okay. Thank you again, Neil. Thank you.
After the break, we're going to continue our discussion about women's health and foods that are good for women's health. But before that, we have a quick song by Train, and it's Drops of Jupiter.
Now that she's back in the atmosphere with drops of Jupiter in her. Like summer and walks like rain, reminds me that there's a time to change. Hey, 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 hey.
talks like June.
Train and Drops of Jupiter. We're going to continue the theme of foods that aren't good for women's health for the next 5 or 6 minutes or so. Now, on the show on the 15th of October, we covered things like tomatoes and peanuts and green tea and pomegranates and coriander, Brazil nuts, turmeric and foods like that. So if you're if you want to go back to the show on the 15th of October, you can find out more about those foods and why they are good for women's health. But we're going to continue the theme of foods that are good for women's health by looking at things like cranberry juice. So cranberry juice, and I'm sure the ladies out there, and some of the men actually, will probably testify to this. When you have a UTI, cranberry juice is really, really good at reducing the duration and also the occurrence of getting a urinary tract infection. And actually they can help by preventing bacteria from adhering to the bladder wall. So if you get a UTI on a regular basis, and it's estimated that around 60% of women get UTIs on a regular basis, and there is actually a biological reason for that to happen. Yeah, with men, the size of the tube between where it, between the end of the bladder and where it comes out is longer than actually the tube for women. And if you are chronically dehydrated, it means you don't urinate as very as much. And when you don't urinate as much, you don't flush out the bacteria that's living in the urethra. So as a woman in particular, but also for men as well, if you get UTIs, make sure you're properly hydrated, because actually the more you pee, the more you will flush out the bacteria that otherwise will grow back up into the bladder and cause the UTI. Lentils are really good. So all beans and legumes can diminish PMS symptoms, like constant hunger, mood swings, and water retention. And this is in part because of their high levels of magnesium. And magnesium helps the body to flush out water and also can boost serotonin levels. And serotonin is the hormone that keeps us in a stable mood, keeps us feeling happy, and also keeps our appetite in check as well. And lentils are rich in fiber. And fiber is a nutrient that's responsible for that bean's cholesterol lowering effects. So actually, if you have lentils on a regular basis and you have an issue with high cholesterol, it can help reduce cholesterol levels. So sage has been passed down from generation to generation in Western herbal tradition as a cure for hot flushes. Now, there have been clinical trials on this with menopausal women who suffer from hot flushes, and a once daily tablet of fresh sage for about 8 weeks can decrease the average number of hot flushes and also reduce their duration as well. Guacamole. Now, one of the issues with women who are going through the menopause is the inability to fall asleep. And one of the things that can help that is guacamole. Now, part of that is because it's got avocado in it. Now, if you remember a show from a few weeks ago, I mentioned that the word or the name avocado comes from the Aztec word ahuaca. And ahuaca is the Aztec word for testicle. So next time you have an avocado, just remember that it comes from the Aztec word for testicle. But avocados are rich in magnesium as well, and magnesium can help relax the body. So whether you have an avocado or whether you have a couple of teaspoons of guacamole, they can help you to get to sleep. And also in older adults, older women, if you do suffer with insomnia, avocados and also kiwis can help as well. Goji berries are really good for combating fatigue. So if you're a lady going through menopause and you're suffering with depressed mood or anxiety or these hot flushes, then goji berries can help to fight fatigue, and goji berry juice can actually help you in terms of exercise performance as well. Kale. Now, kale is a known superfood. Most people have heard of kale. And actually, most people that have tasted kale probably hate it, but it's actually really, really good for you. It's got a lot of vitamin K in it, which is good as a bone builder. And obviously women, as well as men, but not so much men, but women predominantly suffer with osteoporosis as they get older because of the change in hormones. And obviously it makes them more susceptible to things like fractures and bone breakages. Now, if you have kale on a regular basis, and particularly vitamin K, or a diet that's rich in vitamin K, then there has been research in Toronto that have shown a 50% reduction in fractures and a 75% reduction in cancer incidence than those that took a placebo. So vitamin K is actually really, really important in strengthening the bones. As I mentioned, that osteoporosis affects men far more than women. Chickpeas are really good for women that are peri and postmenopausal because of the issues with estrogen levels. And hummus can help you regulate ovarian hormones, and they can actually aid menopause symptoms. And this is because chickpeas are very high in a nutrient called isoflavone. And isoflavones act as a phytoestrogen in humans. In other words, they mimic estrogen's structure, and it allows them to function in the same estrogen pathways. So again, estrogen is very good for women's health as well. And the last one is nettle. Now, bizarrely, nettle tea is actually really good for you because they are very high in iron and folic acid. So if you are suffering with anemia or UTIs. We've mentioned obviously UTIs and cranberry juice. Nettle tea can be very good for you. Nettle also contains vitamin K, and we've also mentioned vitamin K. And vitamin K helps the blood to clot as well. So if you're suffering from heavy periods and perhaps you get a little bit anemic because of the loss of blood, then nettle tea can be quite good for you. So there you go. So as I mentioned, if you go back on the previous show on the 15th of October, you can find more about turmeric, tomatoes, peanuts, green tea, pomegranate, coriander and Brazil nuts. But we've covered today things like goji berries and nettles and cow and chickpeas, guacamole, avocados, kiwis, cranberry juice and lentils. Now, these are good for men as well, but these are particularly good for the ladies out there. So if you're suffering with conditions that afflict women, so perhaps period pains, perhaps bad period symptoms, or your pre or postmenopausal, then you might want to look into some of those foods as they are particularly good for you. So we're going to wrap up the show now. We have a couple of minutes to go. So I'm going to thank Dave once again for coming on the show. Thank you, Dave. It's been good to have you on the show this morning.
You're very welcome. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
And just a quick reminder, David's website is www.targetfirstaid.com, and I will put David's contact details on the show's Facebook page, so you can have a look at the contact details there. A quick reminder of my website address, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. If you'd like to have a chat with me about personal nutrition issues, type 2 diabetes issues, or if you are a company owner and you want to have a chat about a workplace wellness program, then please do make contact with me via my website. And a quick reminder of the show's social media feeds, Twitter, @HealthRadioShow. On Facebook, search The Health Matters Radio Show. And if you want to listen to this show or previous shows, then go to the media page of my website, or you can go to iTunes and search The Health Matters Radio Show, and you can find the show's podcast there as well. If you'd like to come on the show, as David has done, and to, you know, to mention about what you do and to promote what you do, then please make contact with me, as I'm looking for guests for shows in late December and into January next year. And if you've got any questions in the meantime, drop me a tweet, drop me an email, and I will respond to you as well. So after the last song, we have the Channel Radio News and Weather. But to take us into the news and weather, we have one final song by Talking Heads. It's Road to Nowhere. So until the same time next week, stay happy, stay healthy, and I will catch you next Monday.